I guess that must have alarmed you, turning up like
that. If you touch me, I'll more than alarm you.
That won't be necessary. Your report, very detailed. Just for me, it wasn't very entertaining.
It wasn't meant to be.
When I write about people, I try to entertain the reader.
Vennerstrom wasn't entertained much.
Your boss, Romansky, now he tells me
you only do jobs that interest you, so I suppose I should be flattered. You gonna sit down? He also says that you're the one he goes to when the job is, sensitive. That's the word he used, sensitive. I'm gonna use illegal, because that's what it was when you hacked into my computer.
No, I'm not gonna do anything about that. I could, but I won't.
What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna tell you a story, and if it entertains you, maybe you'll decide to help me research further. And if not, I'll do the washing up and you'll never see me again. You know, you should eat that.
What kind of research?
Elizabeth. Oh, can I call you Elizabeth? I want you to help me catch a killer of women.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop. With me today, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
Virtually visiting.
Virtually visiting. Trish Coughlin is with us today, alive and awake.
Yes, very much in spirit and in body this time.
And Jeff Omega has returned. Now we can't get rid of him. He's like Star Trek Tribbles. He just keeps multiplying. Every time you throw one out into space, another one shows up.
Yeah, and like Brad Pitt's character in True Romance is just always around, on, you know, hanging out. He showed up one day and never left.
Oh, that's why my couch has that indentation.
Oh, see, I kept thinking of The Prestige, where you just keep killing your clones of Jeff.
They're not my clones.
Okay, then the Jeff clones keep coming back. I don't know what's happening.
Hey, you know, it's my beauty regimen.
That's why he never ages.
That would explain a lot, actually. So we are through the apocalypse. It's over for now. We're still secluded, though. As the world starts lightening up on restrictions, we'll investigate that down the road. But Canada is still loosening up a little bit. So we'll see about doing in-studio stuff. But it'll probably be a few more weeks of this Google Hangouts thing.
Yeah.
It won't sound exactly the same as you normally expect, but at this point, you're probably used to it. You should be. This week, we're going to be talking about The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo by Stieg Larsson. I'd never seen these movies before, so...
Yeah, me neither.
I had seen them all, but except for the most recent one, the based on that fourth book.
Spider's Web one?
Yes.
Yeah. This was a trip, and I didn't know when I suggested it that they were like 2.5 hours long.
and like pretty heavy subject matter.
And then I actually had the original Swedish stuff in my library. So I cracked the shrink wrap and I'm like, oh, good. The extended edition. Now I am at 3 hours plus.
Yeah, they're long movies, but they don't feel that long when you're watching them.
No,
there's so much happening in them.
They are really, really engaging. Now, before we get started here, this is a murder mystery. We're going to be talking about people, so I don't usually put spoilers at the beginning of the episode, but I'm going to do it this time. We're going to try not to spoil the ending for you, but it may happen. It just might.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you haven't seen The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, I do highly recommend you do so. It's a very good movie, both versions. So there, that's my quick capsule review. It's worth it. Go check it out and then come back to us. We're going to try to dance around it as much as we can, but we may spoil it. So,
and I guess a trigger warning for anyone out there, because there actually is some pretty, you know, There's some pretty intense stuff that we may touch on, dark. And also in the movies and
there's
any of that kind of stuff. If it bothers you, you know.
Yeah, Elizabeth goes through some shit.
Yeah,
poor Elizabeth. And it gets darker in the second and third movies.
I've seen the second one, and I didn't think it was as heavy as the first. So,
no, well, maybe it's the books more, because they get really deep into sort of what really happened to her, and what, especially the third book and third movie.
That is something I noticed. Like, they actually do start getting into her background in that second book and or the second film, and some of that leeches forward into Fincher's version, which they give almost nothing about her past outside of some flashbacks that suggest what happened to her father, what she had done as a child. So there's that aspect where in the Fincher one, she just straight up tells Michael, which is not way the character goes with Mikhail,
no.
I should say. That's not the way it goes in the Swedish one. She doesn't give up any info about herself in that first movie at all.
No,
she's
and
very
that's
private.
That's probably the biggest difference between the two movies is Lisbeth herself.
Yeah.
Is I have to say that I like the Swedish version of Lisbeth just a little bit more.
Me too.
I still think Rooney Mara did a great job, but there's something about Noomi Rapace's, I know I'm saying her name wrong, performance and just the darkness that she brought to that character.
Yeah,
like you felt that darkness from her.
Yeah, she was definitely feels haunted. After seeing the Swedish one, I was like, wow, shit, she can do English. It's a shame that they couldn't get her for the Fincher one, but she played it for 3 years, so I could see why she would. She probably was even offered it and passed on
she
it.
Was
yeah
she actually was offered it and she did pass because she said she couldn't live in that dark place anymore.
Yeah,
no,
especially to do it over again.
Here's my thing, and here's my problem, and I don't know if it's anybody else's problem, but I watched the Swedish version with subtitles, and that's fine. And then I'm watching the English version, and it's still set in Sweden. People are still trying to say their names in Swedish, and they are mimicking Swedish accents in many of the actors.
Yeah, unless you're Daniel Craig, who doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, like I said,
this is stupid and refuse to do it.
With an accent. If you're going to make it English and change it, fucking do it. Like, I just...
But
yeah, commit to it or don't.
Pretend to be Swedish. Just watch the Swedish if you're going to fucking do that.
My big question going into these remakes is, you know, I've always wondered, you know, why do an American remake of the Swedish one? It's already in Swedish. The book takes place in Sweden. Like, I just read the book this past week in preparation for the podcast. And I think that definitely having read the book and then watching the Swedish one, I felt like the Swedish movie was good, but it was still lacking a bunch of stuff that I liked from the book. And the David Fincher one is like it's a much better adaptation of the book. It's much closer. There's still some deviations, but it's much closer.
Yeah.
To the book
see, anyway. I haven't read the book, but I did watch the extended edition, which really gives a lot of time with the characters. And one thing about, and this is a problem sometimes with watching movies back to back. Like if I had started with the Fincher one, I probably really would have really loved it. But watching extended edition and spending a little more time with a large cast of characters in this murder mystery and just letting it stew a little bit more, I felt really benefited the film as an extended edition, because I actually feel like Fincher's feels really rushed to me at over 2.5 hours. It feels rushed to me. I can't believe I'm saying that, but it does.
Well, yeah,
it feels rushed to me.
I totally agree with you though.
He spends a lot more time on that ending than the Swedes do though.
He does, and that's where that extra time comes from.
Mm-hmm.
But see, and that's the thing I kind of liked better about the Swedish version is the quote-unquote heist at the end didn't need that time. I honestly don't care that much that she gets the money. I like that she does, but I don't need to see how it happened.
They were setting up the sequel because the sequel takes place, and that those events are directly relate to the way the second book and movie start.
Yeah, they do more so in the Fincher one than they actually even do in the Swedish one to set up that next film, because they're already talking about some of the murders.
Yeah.
Right at the end in the news broadcasts and stuff. And that,
well,
I mean, it's handled very similarly. We just see it in more detail in the Fincher one, which I kind of agree with Trish, didn't need to be there. And considering the soft box office on the Fincher one, we never did get the second one.
Well,
so it did wind up being pointless.
And the Swedish one, what I found interesting about that is if you listened I don't know if you saw this in your extended version or if they changed it in anything else, but that guy that he was investigating, Wommerstein or something like that.
Wennerstrom.
Wennerstrom. They say, they're considering it a suicide, but in the Fincher version, it's 3 shots to the head.
Yeah, it was execution style.
To the suicide, and the other one I felt was also a little bit better.
Yeah, when Wennerstrom, and the Wennerstrom suicide makes more sense.
Yeah, that's a change that they made from the book, because it was like gang style in the book, but it was like a mafia thing as well. So there, it was interesting.
And actually, both make sense because they do talk about him, Wennerstrom, being involved in the arms trade and stuff. So he was making shady deals, and suddenly all of this coming to light is definitely either worth doing a suicide or a fake suicide or being gang styled murdered outright. Either one of them is a suitable end to that character, and a character might like a big villain in the movie that we really don't get to see. It all happens in news broadcasts and stuff. Like, Mikhail's already had problems, and it was far more severe in the Swedish one, where he actually has to go to jail for 3 years for not being able to back up his facts.
Was it three months? I thought it was three years.
But okay, yeah. 3 months is a lot.
Bad.
It's still bad, but at least it's not 3 years. Bad.
But Wernerstrom isn't the villain. He's the catalyst. Right?
Yeah.
He's the thorn in Mikhail's side, but yeah, the villain is our murderer.
Yeah, well, the Wennerstrom is a kind of a background villain. Yeah. It is a story that happens off screen in between the pages or whatever, and we're seeing the end of that story.
The major difference between his role, kind of in the two movies, is in the Swedish version, Lisbeth is looking at when she suspects Wennerstrom has done something, and that's fine. But she's more kind of interesting in looking at Mikhail, and she's sort of curious, and she brings about him kind of coming to her just simply through like a lot of other stuff. Like, she's already kind of helping him.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Wangers have hired that firm, security firm she works for, to look into Mikhail to see if he's the right guy. He's obviously proven himself as an investigative reporter in the past enough for Wanger, Henrik, to have some confidence that this guy might be the guy to solve this mystery, this murder of Harriet going missing, being one of the kind Wangers that are left. But Lisbeth, once she finds that information, she doesn't actually stop investigating him, even though she's done her report. So she is fascinated about his story in some regard.
Exactly. And in the Fincher version, she's inserting herself. Like, she hacks Mikhail's computer in the Swedish version, but she hacks Wennerstrom's in the Fincher version.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like
She does in both. We just don't see the activity in the Swedish one as much, because she does provide that information to Mikhail at the end of the film once he's gotten out of jail.
He gets
to go after Wennerstrom again because of it.
But it's a timeline thing. Like, in the Swedish one, I think she starts hacking him after Mikhail's gone to jail, whereas in the Fincher one, she's doing it before they meet.
Well, I mean,
That's actually much closer to the book, too. Actually,
well, no, in the meeting with when we first are introduced with Lisbeth, who really goes out of her way to look odd at work, she doesn't look nearly as awful as she does at work. So she's really trying to freak people out, and I love that about her. I think that's fabulous. She looked awesome with that. I mean, Sam and I know people like this, so. A very goth is like, that's cool. And so does Jeff, I'm sure. So we're all familiar with people who like to dress in this manner, and to see her go that extra mile while she's at work, I think
loved
was because we never saw her look like that again for the rest of the film. But she's just deliberately trying to freak people out at work, which I think is fabulous. And it kind of plays into her sociopathic nature a bit, because she is lack of emotion, but I think she knows right and wrong as well. She's definitely. Yeah. Not going out killing people or whatever, but there's a definite a detachment to it with her, and that's because of her rough life that she had.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's sort of like she's got I don't know if she's like a full sociopath, but I think she's got like just this armor that she's had to put on her entire life, so she comes across that way, but she doesn't know how any other way to be to her, living is just surviving.
Mm-hmm.
So she can't do anything else.
My favorite moment is in the original film, the Swedish movie, when Mikhail asks her, do you have a photographic memory? And realizes she has a photographic memory. It's a slow reveal where they seem to go out of their way to tell you every 10 seconds in the Fincher one. But I love that slow reveal. And she goes, and Mikhail says, oh man, I wish I had a photographic memory. And I'm like, man, if you lived a hard life, I'm like, the biggest crime here is she can't forget.
Yes.
And I was so touched by that. I'm like, that was amazing how they handled that. It was like, yeah, she has this gift of memory, but it's also, for her, it's a fucking curse.
And she, Newman Rapace does it so well.
Yeah.
Where you see that pain.
And you see, like, exactly. Ah. It's, none of it is spoken. It's right there on the screen and just raw emotion. I fucking loved it. Okay, well, let's break into the trailer here for the original Swedish trailer. Now, we've talked about in the past where I can find an English trailer. It's got a little bit of voiceover and a lot of music, which could be get me in trouble on the YouTubes. Or or I could say, hey, suck it up and listen to it in its original Swedish version. It's still compelling. So that's what I'm going to do. Here it is, the original Swedish trailer, much of which our audience is probably not going to understand. But you'll get the tone and the feel, and I think that's important sometimes with a foreign language trailer. So check it out, run it through Google Translate if you want, and we'll be right back.
Men jag måste varna dig att Lisbeth är en lite speciell flicka. Men missbedöm henne inte. Hon är vår absolut bästa resurser.
Vad kan du berätta för mig om Blomqvist?
Mikael Blomqvist, även känd som Kalle Blomqvist. Ett smeknamn han fick efter att ha klarat upp några bankrån på 80-talet. Sen dess har han varit en offentlig person utan någon större hemlighet.
Ja, du känner inte min familj. Du vet inte vad de är i stånd till. En av de där personerna tog livet av vargen.
Du ska jobba för storkapitalet nu. Vem är du?
Jag behöver din hjälp.
Du jobbar som en professionell hacker. Mycket vet du om det som jag arbetar med.
40 år bor på en 16-årig flicka.
Om det blir minsta problem med dig, Lisbeth, så ska jag se till att du blir inspärrad resten av livet. För jag vet allt om dina psykiska problem och din våldsamma bakgrund.
Men det finns inget att hämta här. Det finns inget svar.
Alla har hemligheter.
Du gör bara ont värre genom att komma hit med din lilla hora.
Vilka är misstänkta? Ingen. Alla.
Du vet allt om det. Jag vet inte ett skit om det.
Det är så det.
I kind of like hearing it in its original language. When I was listening to both and I heard an English trailer, I'm like, wow, there's not much in it.
I was looking around for a version to watch. I found the one that I watched was on Tubi, which is, you know, always saving me for movies that I can't seem to find anywhere else. But I found a version that it said dubbed, and I hoped that it was subbed. And it was dubbed in English, and it was very, very terrible. I did not watch that one, but... But it was like, I went to the scene and they're like, you know, the guy's pulling out stuff from the archives and it's like fairly serious. And he's just like, I found the files that you're looking for.
I actually did watch a dub on my version because it's very difficult to take notes when you're trying to pay attention to subtitles as well. So I actually did turn on the dub on mine. And yes, initially, I was like, oh, maybe I'm going to go back to the subtitles, but you get used to it. And I mean, nothing lines up in it, but I got used to it and it was fine. But I mean, when I rewatch it, I'll watch in its original Sweden. So when I can pay better attention to the subtitles, because it's like, I probably would have watched it with subtitles, but sometimes when you're taking notes, people are talking, you got to pause it. It's already a 3-hour fucking movie, so I'm like, I don't need to make it 4. Well, let's get into some of the details of this, and then we can talk some more about the movie. Based on the novel by Stieg Larsson, the Millennium Trilogy that has since got some sequels since his passing. Unfortunately, he had 10 books planned and only three actually got finished. His girlfriend has the layouts for the next one, which was mostly completed. I do believe it was around 75%. She was going to finish it, and she's got layouts for the next, all the way to the next 10. But the rights to the character went to his family, and she is not sharing the notes, so who the fuck knows?
Yeah, basically what had happened is Stieg Larsson, you know, his whole life, he was a journalist, spent a lot of his career dedicated to researching and exposing, like, underground Nazi cells in Sweden, and just in general, exposing a lot of Nazi groups. Because of that, he never got married to his partner, basically to protect her. But basically what that meant is when he died, she had no legal rights to anything, even though they basically lived as if they were married, you know, and it's pretty unfortunate. Years. Pretty unfortunate.
Yeah, so, and unfortunately we are deprived of some good stuff. But he left us with three great books. Screenplay was by Nikdaj Arcel, who wrote The Dark Tower, which, let's face it, wasn't his best moment. No. Rasmus Hursteberg wrote A Royal Affair, and this was directed by Niels Arden Oplev, who directed the more recent version of Flatliners, which I guess would have been a sequel make. Kind of a remake with, but a sequel at the same time. Maybe. I haven't seen it, so I don't know how to judge that one yet and whether we'll ever cover it or not. I kind of want to, just because I love Flatliners. You know, on paper, that doesn't sound great, but this movie is great. Starring, yeah, I know, the people behind it, not great. But
yeah, and like Noomi Rapace, she's a great actress, you know
well, from Prometheus. I mean, I'm talking about the people from behind the scenes, but yeah, Michael Nyquist is great. He was in John Wick. He plays the lead character of Mikael Blomqvist. Noomi Rapace was Lisbeth Salander. She was in, she has been in some kind of shit stuff, actually. She was in Bright, which was shit, but she was awesome in it. She looked fabulous as an elf. She was in Prometheus, which is all right. And she's in the Jack Ryan television series, currently on Amazon Prime. Ewa Froehling was Harriet Wanger. Lena Endre was Erica Berger. She's actually, you can catch her in the second Kingsman movie, The Golden Circle. Sven Bertil Taub was Enric Wanger. Peter Haber was Martin Wanger. Peter Andersen was Nils Bjurman. That version of Bjurman was the one I hated the most. Yeah. Like, he was an awful human being. But you can actually catch him in a different Jack Ryan. He was actually in the film of, still not a great movie, Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit. It's not bad, though. As far as Jack Ryans go, that was not too bad. That's the one with, what's-his-face from the Star Trek newer movies that played Kirk.
Chris Pine.
Oh, Chris Pine.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that's the one with Chris Pine. That one's not bad.
Oh, it's the Jack Ryan movie that's not the Harrison Ford ones, but it's better than the Ben Affleck one.
Yeah.
I love how we're ranking our Jack Ryans. Well, what about Alec Baldwin?
Yeah, I was about to say. Like,
oh, yeah.
Poor Alec Baldwin, who just got shoved out of the role he created and was perfectly fine in it.
He was really good in it. I liked it.
Marika Langerkrantz was Cecilia Wanger. Ingvar Hindwall was Dersch Frode. Bjorn Graneth was Gustav Morell. Annika Hallen was Annika Gianni. And Gösta Bedfeld was Harald Wanger. And that's where I'm going to stop because there's a lot of them.
There's so many Wangers. I had to stop every once in a while to be like, okay, this person is this and this and this.
Yeah, and we're also talking about dead Wangers, and we've got like younger versions of them as we see photographs and stuff building up that past of the Wangers. And Harriet, basically, Enric's been investigating her disappearance for like 40 years. So she's been gone since she was a teenager.
I think that's one of the hallmarks of you know, a story that you can tell was derived from a novel, like the sprawling cast of characters, especially in a mystery. Yeah, when something's conceived as a novel, that's something where, well, at the very beginning of the book, actually, there's a family tree of the Wanger family for reference. So, you know.
Oh, my. Mm.
Yeah, it's a lot. I was actually very astounded by the amount of detail within the film itself. Detail within the sets, detail within the character developments, and the sprawling amount of characters within it. Everything feels very full and real and full of life. And that's quite the undertaking, and that's probably why this movie was so successful. They did a great job building it. It looks fantastic for having a budget of only $13 million, which was probably very expensive for Sweden, but I mean, the budget for the remake was 90, and yeah. I feel, well, I don't know, David Fincher did a really good job painting the canvas. I mean, everything does look great in that movie as well, but it feels a little more polished, a little more Hollywood, and I think maybe that the Swedish version, it just feels a little more real to me.
Mm-hmm. And we were watching the David Fincher one. One thing I was really struck by is I think a lot of the money went into the recreations, because there were a lot of big portions of the investigation in the Swedish one, which were just shown through photographs, versus in the Fincher one where there were full recreations and scenes and stuff played while people were talking about things. And that definitely comes with the price tag as well. It's all period.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking that too, just before you said it. But there's some bits that they had to recreate for the photographs, which I think might have had to cost a bit too.
No, and this is one of those slow burn mysteries that you're just really compelled along the way with Mikhail as his discoveries are going on. He's been hired by the Wenger family to investigate Harriet being missing by Henrik. And for good, 80, 90 minutes, like, the story of Mikhail and Lisbeth are completely separate for the most part. She checks in on him, but because her laptop gets screwed up by some people who attack her at the train station, she has to get a new one, and that takes some time.
And some horrible experiences.
And horrible, horrible experiences along the way, because she does have a record because of lighting her father on fire. Who was also a horrible human being, but that kind of, if you go further into the Swedish movies, will get revealed, so I'm not going to go too heavily into that. But terrible childhood to begin with, and she's brought up in the system with this guardian, who she has a pretty good relationship with. Unfortunately, he has a heart attack and is assigned a new one, who very much abuses his position.
Mm-hmm.
And takes control of her finances, and this is where things get really bad, because now she can't access her own money that she has earned. She is an adult, so this is a little bizarre to me, but this is might be the difference between the Swedish system and the American system, and even Canadian system.
With guardianship, I think we'll remember the whole Britney Spears thing. If you have a mental illness, like, he keeps talking about institutionalizing her. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's so much being in the system. It's the fact if you have, like, kind of a designated mental illness, they can sort of put this guardianship upon you.
Mm-hmm.
And once they've assigned a guardian, that's what happens. And that's why it can happen over the age of 18.
I think that if you watch these movies and you really like them and you're interested, I'd really recommend reading the book. Because one really interesting aspect is there's a lot of things like this where the book then takes an opportunity to have an aside to basically tell you about something, and that's like happening in Sweden.
Yeah.
This is one of those things where it was like, there's a certain percentage of people where basically because of the way that the system is set up, it's like they're adults who have no capability over their life. And there's like a percentage of young people, and and it's an entirely a thing where, I guess as a little aside, all of the books were kind of like, as a journalist, Stieg Larsson couldn't really write about certain things.
Yeah.
And all of these books were kind of like different topics that he really felt he wanted to write about, but couldn't as a journalist, but could through fiction. And I think that was kind of one of them.
Yeah. I mean, what was the original Swedish title was translated to Men Who Ate Women. Essentially what this book is. And yes, that happens with her guardian. That happens with the reveal of multiple serial killers within this book who go after women. There's the Nazis, as Jeff mentioned in Stieg Larsson's background. And there are two Nazis within the Wenger, actually three. One of them who's dead. That's an embarrassment on Henrik's part as well, as he's very embarrassed by his brothers who embrace the Nazi lifestyle. One of them, unforgivingly so, but he doesn't turn out to be the killer. Spoiler.
Well, and it's the thing with, like, Stieg Larsson is, there was like a bunch of Nazi cells and a bunch of like Sweden was having a problem with it. And his whole idea is like, we can't just ignore this shit.
Yeah.
This is part of our past. We kind of have to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I was also reading too that like Stieg Larsson was himself the editor, the co-editor with his partner of a magazine that's kind of like Millennium. Like I think the magazine was called Expo, but it seems like by and large there is a lot of autobiographical aspects of the movie, or of the at least of the story, I guess.
So there's a lot of Mikhail. Like Mikhail is basically a cipher for Stieg Larsson.
Uh-huh. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Oh, that's very interesting. But so we were talking about Bierman here, and so this dude's controlling her money, and first time she tries to get money for her laptop, he forces her to blow him, essentially. Both films do it.
He sexually assaults her.
Yeah, it's not
forcing somebody to give you oral sex is not.
No, it is
not okay.
No, I was about to say the way they film it, it's not like pornographic or anything, but it is the way they film. It's also like, yeah, you know what's going on, and this is still very disturbing.
Yeah,
and will get under your skin, and it'll affect more people than others. But it is a very emotional and affecting scene, and. This is also a character of Lisbeth is not going to take this shit. She's got her own little plan as well. Unfortunately, that goes horrible for her because she goes back for some more money. She works for a security firm. She's hides cameras within her bag and stuff when she goes to see him again. And he makes her come to his home. That's a red flag. I don't know. Number 20. I mean, she already knows what kind of guy this is. And it's like, okay, if I can catch him doing this again, I have to blow him again. And I got it on camera and I can use this against him. Unfortunately, he full on rapes her, cuffs her to the bed and tears off her clothes. It is a really disgusting scene. And he is a disgusting human being. It happens in both movies. It's disgusting in both. But it's interesting how Fincher portrays Bierman in the other one. Where he's still, I don't know, he comes off almost overtly friendly, even though he's doing these horrible things, where he's just aggressive in the Swedish one outright, which makes me just hate him that much more.
Yeah.
I think both are very effective, though.
I felt one thing that in the Fincher one that informed like the movie and his handling of the material quite a lot was his experience doing movies like Seven and Zodiac specifically, where he spent a lot of time making movies about people who do horrible things and studying like their psychology and stuff. And
who don't think they're doing anything wrong. Or in his case, well, I did something wrong. I'm very sorry. He even apologizes to her for it and then rapes her afterwards. Like, oh, good God.
But see, that's the mentality of a lot of this stuff is he's like going, no, you owe me something and you gave it to me. And like, there's no apology. Like, it's not, it doesn't matter. It's like, they don't think they're doing anything wrong because they think they're fucking owed it.
Yeah. And I think both portrayals are valid.
It's like every person they see, they only see as a victim. And then that's it. Like, you know, there are no consequences on them because, you know, they're above their victims.
Yeah,
he's using his station of power to control these people. He's got a guardianship, and she's there to make sure this doesn't happen to anybody else as well as herself, to get control of her life, but to return it to people we don't even see.
Yeah.
And don't even know about. We'll never know about those characters. But she makes a point of going, I'm going to check up on you. And if I hear of anything, of you doing this to anybody else, this video is going public. She's
and the tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
You make sure you tattoo him. The one thing I liked in the remake is she comes back and you see her checking on him.
Yeah, let's
and
talk about
next time you try it again. Yeah, I will tattoo your head.
That is something I really enjoyed in the Swedish one. I mean, it's in both. Like after her rape, she goes to get that tattoo on her ankle, and the tattoo artist says this might be painful. In the Swedish one, she asks, "What's the most painful needle?" So she's doing essentially market research for what she's going to be doing. But I'm guessing the barbed wire around the ankle was a symbol of what she had just gone through, and maybe within the novels more of those tattoo stories would have been revealed there. I don't know if that's like apparent in the book.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. It was like, you know, she got the band as a reminder specifically because in her viewing of the situation, she had misjudged the situation, which meant that she had misjudged how he saw her and how he saw her as more of a victim than she thought that she could be seen as. So it was like a little bit, you know, this horrible thing happened, but she needs to remember it, I guess. In explaining it, the psychology maybe sounds a little messed up, but like a reminder of how someone saw her as a victim and she's not going to be seen that way again.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, I think that makes sense.
The tattoo thing in the books, I haven't read the books. So do they get to the dragon at some point? Or do you think that was probably in the later books that he was planning?
Well, I don't know. Sam, you've read all of the books, I think, right?
I have, but it was like, what, 6-7 years ago? No, longer, because it was before the movies came out. So yeah, my memory is really vague on it. That's why I'm thinking about rereading them, is because I want to see what gaps are missing there. Because
it doesn't say anything in the first book anyway about the dragon tattoo specifically.
No, but that's interesting about the tattoo is one of the things that Stieg Larsson was upset about was the fact that they made the tattoo smaller on the book cover. He describes it as a full back tattoo in the books, and they made it this tiny little shoulder tattoo.
Oh, and it's very big, actually, in the movie. It is her full back in the Swedish one. It's more off to the side on her shoulder in the remake.
It's like it was on the cover of the original book.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it looked cool. I'm actually undecided of which version of the tattoo I like more.
One thing in the remake that I didn't notice, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but one thing that they do is she has like a hacker tag of, she calls herself Wasp. And I don't remember seeing that in Fincher's version, although she does have the tattoo on her neck.
Did Plague maybe call her that at one point? I don't think it actually does come up in Fincher's movie at all. I don't think the Wasp thing is ever established.
I think possibly, and I could be remembering wrong, but I think that there is stuff on her computer. I think, I can't remember if it's ever said, maybe by Plague, but I think that you see stuff on her computer as she's going through stuff like, you know, hard drive, you know, dash Wasp something.
Okay, yeah. I can see him putting it in there. He's very slick at building that detail.
I think part of it too is this is one thing that changed a lot in the remake is when Mikhail and Lisbeth first come in contact, she initiates it. Mm-hmm. She initiates it through that email with the biblical verses. And she taunts him. Whereas in the remake,
it's his daughter. It's Mikhail's daughter who comes up with that. Elizabeth still haven't met. And then he does. And you're right. He finds out about the investigation and Mikhail initiates that confrontation. It's like, okay, you've done this. I consider that illegal. He's not impressed in both versions, but sees the potential and how useful she can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it diminishes Elizabeth a little bit at that point.
Yes.
I thought so too.
But he corrects it kind of, and I'm still not sure how I feel about the change, but she's the one who figures out the serial killer aspect of it on her way to meet with Mikhail for her first day on the job, as it were. And she investigates like two or three of them on her way and comes mm-hmm. complete with a package saying, this is what's happening. Whereas in the Swedish version, they figure it out together once she comes to work for him.
The Swedish one, she stays away from police officers as much as possible. She stays out mm-hmm. of the stations, and Mikhail does that research with and contact with police officers for the most part.
Uh-huh.
And if there is, she does have contact, it's usually outside of a large police presence. For the most part, she will duck off while those meetings are going on. So there's an underlying story there as well that I think adds to her character. So when I was watching the Fincher one, I'm like, oof, she's a very different person in this movie.
Uh-huh. She is. And I mean, that, yeah, she would have an innate distrust of the police because she would blame all of her problems on the police mm-hmm. to a certain extent. Right.
Well,
because
it's the whole thing is they never protected her.
Yeah. They
in
failed.
Fact, they probably protected her abusers yeah. more than her.
Exactly.
I assume that's going to be backstory within the novel as well.
I got the strong impression while I was reading the book, and also kind of through the Swedish movie as well, because I believe the Swedish movie came out before there was an English translation, like in a big way in print.
Okay.
The book.
Oh.
Because I think that the book was translated in 2010, and I could be mistaken, but I know the movie came out in 2009.
Well, and I could see where the movie having been such a big international hit, despite being a foreign language film, that they would rush a translation out after the fact. So I imagine the success of the film probably prompted broader translations of the books as well.
Yeah, definitely. But I definitely got the sense there's a lot of stuff in the story that I feel is kind of Swedish specific, that it's easy to come in with a North American mindset about certain things because there's a lot of similarities to our culture, but there's a lot of ways in which Sweden is both ahead and behind mm-hmm. North America in terms of how they operate things. So I think that there's some stuff like that. I got the strong impression that police in Sweden are not exactly what you said, not really someone who you would look to help you if you were not someone who is like at least upper middle class. But that, yeah, that's just an impression that I got from the book, just from like how it's written. That could be the author's voice as well. But I think that there's a lot of Swedish specific stuff. Oh, one thing I wanted to mention, actually, that's very Swedish specific is his name, Mikael Blomqvist. Everyone calls him Kale Blomqvist. And basically, the woman who wrote Pippi Longstockings wrote a series of kids' detective novels starring a kid detective named Kale Blomqvist. So anytime people call him that in the Swedish one, he's like eye-rolling. And that's like, you would know that being Swedish going into it because he's a kids' book character that you would have known growing up with. Some stuff like that.
Yeah, that's definitely something that doesn't translate.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I had to look into that one a little bit because at the beginning, when he's gone back to the office after he's lost, and his friend is like, oh yeah, this rag is going to run this story the next time, and it's about him having an affair with a woman, it was like Kalle Blomqvist, and I was like, okay, well, who is that? I thought it was like his wife or something. I couldn't figure it out, and then through figuring out this Kalle detective connection was the only way I could figure out that they meant him and not somebody else.
That brings up another thing that was, and again, my memory of the book is quite vague, but I do remember his family, Mikhail's family, being a lot more involved in the book or more present in the book, like his ex-wife and his daughter. And definitely. I mean, Fincher brought his daughter in a little bit more and his wife in a little bit more, but he went to her a fair bit for advice, if I remember correctly, in the book.
Huh?
To his wife.
Yeah, the daughter's not like even present in the original.
No.
No.
There's like a whole thing in the book with him basically having a polyamorous relationship with the editor of Millennium because she's married, and how maybe the way he handled it led to the divorce with his wife, but they're still friends and get together. And there's kind of like this big, like open kind of dialogue about relationships in the book that, yeah, I think that maybe is not quite as necessary to everything else that's in the book for adaptation, but
no. And it just comes across as cheating in the movie. It doesn't really come mm-hmm. across as sort of this consensual arrangement between all these people. And yeah, I do remember that from the book, and it was consensual. Like, they all knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Right? And they were okay with uh-huh. it. Whereas, yeah, in the movie, it's like, well, he's just having an affair with his business partner.
Mm-hmm. That, you know what? That does answer a few questions, because when I was watching the original Swedish version, I was sitting there going like, well, how can he not know? And then in the remake, like, how can her husband not? Because they're not being very discreet. But that answers that kind of question I had about their indiscretion about it all.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think both movies kind of assume that you've read the books in some ways, because there's a lot that they sort of carried into it without giving you the backstory on it. And that's one sort of noticeable point there is that, because they're very open about their affection towards each other. And it's clear that they have an intimate relationship.
I can see why they're not in the films, because they don't drive the story in any way, but it does leave you a little head scratching, more so in the Swedish one than the remake. But yeah, I was kind of like Trish, I'm like, what is going on here? Like, it does feel like he's cheating, but she doesn't seem that upset about it.
Everybody's fine.
Daughter's so missing weird. Entirely. Yeah, but then there's Lisbeth, who I want to get back to her, because during the investigation, there's in the Swedish one, she just kind of like, I need to get off. So Blomqvist gets what she needs, goes back to bed. Now, that scene changes a bit, and it's a little more intimate in the David Fincher one, where it feels like it's more of a pity fuck to make Blomqvist feel better after being shot at.
Well, and that was one big difference I felt from both, between the two movies, is in the Swedish version, they really set it up well where Elizabeth is fascinated by Mikhail. Like, she's she's actually engaged with him. And I think it's because in doing her investigation, she found this person who genuinely has the integrity that he portrays. She couldn't find anything to indicate that he was anything but what he said and did. And you don't get that sense in the remake or in the American version. You don't get that sense of her sort of fascination with him. And you also get the feeling that Lisbeth in the Swedish version, she sort of fulfills her needs and then she moves on. Whereas you don't get that same sense in the American version.
Well, I mean, there is that, both have that end scene where she sees Blomkvist with Erica and she rides off. Now, it does feel like, oh, like maybe there's more to this partnership that can continue in the Swedish one rather than a relationship expectation, where it does feel like more it's a relationship expectation in the Fincher one, and she's kind of crushed by it, which seems a little more out of character for way she's kind of portrayed. I mean, generally we see a little more emotion out of her in the American one, though.
I think it's sort of this whole thing where she was very curious about Blomkvist because he seemed to be this complete anomaly compared to all the, probably a bunch of the other men she's met in her life. Like, he was decent. He didn't hate women outright. So she's also curious, like, how can this guy be like this when all these other men are like this? So she was very curious. But I think in the Swedish version, there was like an expectation there might be more. But I think when she saw him with that other woman, she was like, oh, so that's the bad part.
Yeah, this is like, another person who's let me down.
Yeah, this is another man who's let me down. That's also why she's so angry at her guardian for having a stroke, because she's like, you let me down.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's why she's able to kind of like just wander off, because she's like, that's how you will disappoint me.
Yeah, this is for these people she actually starts caring about. Oh, you got sick and you're going to leave me. You're sleeping around on your wife and, oh, okay, you're not that good either. That sort of thing. So, yeah, she's constantly disappointed by people around
me.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I thought we had this partnership and, yeah. But granted, she just goes and takes Medistrom's money and gets to jot around the world for a while on a lot of cash. Now I'm going to take a break here. We're going to run the American David Fincher trailer for you, and we'll be right back to wrap up our talk about The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
She's one of the best investigators I have.
But
she's different.
In what way?
In every way.
Something wrong with the report?
Anything you chose not to disclose?
He's clean, in my opinion. He's honest. Our credibility isn't dead yet.
Mine is.
He's had a long-standing sexual relationship with his co-editor of the magazine. Sometimes he pleasures her. Not often enough, in my opinion.
No, you're right not to include that.
I need your help. You come stay on the island. A way of avoiding all those people you might want to avoid right now. You will be investigating thieves, misers, bullies, the most detestable collection of people that you will ever meet. My family. This is Harriet. Someone in the family murdered Harriet. And for the past 40 years has been trying to drive me insane. Those are from her, and the rest from her killer.
You failed to adapt to four foster homes. Arrested twice for intoxication, twice for assault. How many partners have you had in the last month? And how many of those were men?
I should have control of my money.
And you will, once you learn to be sociable. Why don't we start with me? You know what to do.
I can't find something you've been unable to find in 40 years.
You don't know that. You have a very keen investigative mind.
You were here that day.
A terrible day. Searching, not finding.
I never found the body.
Was it spontaneous?
Was it calculated?
Did she know something someone wished she didn't?
The last time I reported on something without being absolutely sure, I lost my life saving. I need a research assistant.
I know an excellent one. She did the background check on you.
The what?
You don't think we could hire just anyone for something like this?
It's Mikael Blomkvist. May I come in? We need to talk.
Hey, who do you think you are?
Put some clothes on. Get rid of your girlfriend. Can I call you Elizabeth? I want you to help me catch a killer of women. You've got absolutely no idea how they're connected to the death of a 16-year-old girl.
Don't you need to look over these?
I got it.
It's better to look at what I am about to show you on an empty stomach.
What are you doing?
Reading your notes.
They're encrypted.
Please.
Rape, torture, fire, animals, religion. Am I missing anything?
The names. I may have something.
Nobody likes people poking around in their lives.
Everybody knows why you're here.
Someone killed her. Someone on the island that day.
If a woman approaches any beast and lies with it, you shall kill the woman and the beast.
These people are insane.
Soon you will know us all, only too well, with my apologies.
That was the trailer for David Fincher's The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. The screenplay was written by Steven Zalian, who did Hannibal, Mission Impossible, and Clear and Present Danger. It's a pretty good list. Schindler's List, Moneyball, American Gangster, Gangs of New York. Fuck, this guy's a hit writer.
He's really good. I was reading that when he was offered to write the movie, basically they gave him the book, and he'd never read it before, and he just read the book and then was like, you know what, this is going to be great. Shut himself inside for like 3 months and churned out the first draft. And overall, it took 6 months for him to like pick apart the book and do the adaptation. I thought he did an excellent job adapting the novel.
Yeah, and it's different enough where it does feel different from the Swedish one. Now, I still prefer the Swedish one because I don't know, maybe I wouldn't have, if I watched the original film rather than the extended, I might not have felt that way. And I think that's a case of getting attached to certain cast and characters. I mean, as far as their ratings go, IMDb, they're exactly the same at 7.8 out of 10. And they're very close on the Rotten Tomatoes as well. And I think they're both fine films. My preference leans toward the Swedish, but it's I think they're both great, and you should check them all out. David Fincher, of course, most famous for Seven and Fight Club, lots of different things. Daniel Craig, we have talked about in the past in episode 155.
Casino Royale.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Was that right?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll be honest, I've been working a lot, and I didn't get to dig as deep as I would like, so I might miss stuff. So let me know, Sam, if I do. Rooney Mara was Lisbeth Salander, and I'd forgotten we had talked about her, and that was episode 112.
That was the Nightmare on Elm Street remakes.
That is correct. Christopher Plummer was Enric Vanger, and we did talk about him in episode 158 when we remade
Dreamscape.
That is the one. Stellan Skarsgård was Martin Vanger, and it was kind of cool to see him in a more villainous role this go around. And we talked about him way back in episode 89. We didn't get any sleep on this one.
Vanishing?
Oh, no, come on. That was the biggest hint.
Give you a great hint.
Oh,
there,
Insomnia.
Trish.
That's the one.
You're familiar with that right now. It's either Insomnia or like Dead to the World for you right now, isn't it?
But my brain is shut down because of the frickin' Insomnia.
Steven Berkoff was Frode, and we actually talked about him even further back in episode 47.
And I missed that one.
Ah, this was our sci-fi remake of High Noon, and that was Outland. So that one goes back way, way back. He's got a long resume, and he's still going strong. So he was great in this movie, and he's usually great in all the others. Most people remember him as, I do believe he was Moriarty in that second Sherlock Holmes movie.
Ooh.
Robin Wright was Erica Berger, and she's basically Mikhail's partner at Millennium. And you will most recognize her these days from House of Cards and Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
Soon to be seen in Wonder Woman 84, whenever the theaters open up.
I love how you just sort of skimmed over like, Princess Bride. Like,
yeah.
I can only write so many people, so many things down.
But one of the most famous film she's ever been in, and one of the most famous films ever, and you just sort of skim over it.
Well, yeah, because everybody knows her from House of Cards these days.
I know you said these days, but I just wanted to point out that you did skim over it.
Yeah, fuck Princess Bride. I love Princess Bride. I love Princess Bride. I just knew that would be a trigger.
It works.
Okay. It's just now that I've rewritten her as in Wonder Woman, like, because in my head I'm like, I love that character, so Buttercup can go to the left. I'm going to concentrate on that character.
There you go. York Van Wageningen. Let's try to get a stab at that. York Van Wageningen. That's as close as I'm going to get. Played Bierman, and he was in Escape Room. Jolie Richardson was Anita Vonger. We actually talked about her a couple of times. First time was in episode 103.
101 Dalmatians.
And the second time was in episode 160 when we remade
Event Horizon, which was essentially a remake of The Black Hole, I think.
Well, yeah, go listen. We actually remade Black Hole. We remade Event Horizon. You guys go be the judge. Do a double feature and let us know if that is true. Yeah. Geraldine James played Cecilia. She was in both Sherlock Holmes movies. Now that I've mentioned them. And Goran Visnjic was Armansky. And he was actually most recently, I really like this role. He did a guest spot on Doctor Who playing Nikola Tesla.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
Yeah, it was cool.
He did a good Tesla.
He was. Donald Sumter was Detective Morrell. Most people will recognize him from Game of Thrones. And I just wanted, because I wanted to do a shout out to Julian Sands, who played young Henrik in some of the flashbacks. We don't actually get to hear him, but we do get to see him, and he's very distinct looking. And we talked about Julian Sands in episode 145, which I'm sure Sam skipped over this, but do you remember? That was the one.
And Goran Visnjic was in Practical Magic.
Yes, he was.
Oh, I did miss that. See, yeah. I didn't do too badly, though.
And there was a cameo.
What was the cameo, Sam?
Joel Kinnaman was in the American remake.
Yeah,
very briefly.
It must have been very briefly.
That was right near the end. He's worked at the magazine. But yeah, he was in, of course, RoboCop, right? So
yeah.
132.
Would have been early in his career for him.
Yes. Early in his American career, American sort of appearances. Yeah, I think it was around the same time as The Killing was sort of ramping up to and sort of getting him exposure in North America.
Okay, well, let's get back into some Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. What do you got going there?
Yeah, well, one thing that we didn't mention immediately after the trailer was that great, well, I liked it when it came out and I like it now, the Trent Reznor, Karen O, Immigrant Song cover they used for the opening credits of the Fincher one.
Oh, and Trent Reznor did the entire soundtrack for the film. It was actually longer than the film. There's tracks that were never released, and if you go track it down, I think Reznor released it himself, and it's a 3-hour soundtrack, so it's a big one.
It's really, really solid. If you like the Social Network score, you know, this is basically just a fuller, meatier version of something like that.
Yeah.
Nice. For those opening credits, I don't know if you guys in the shorter version you watched had the same thing, but I know in the longer version, the credits were kind of the same as like the Fincher version. Like they were kind of graphic novel-y.
Yeah. That was because it was a television series. The extended one in Sweden, they took the film, added back in the extended scenes, and then because there are natural breaks in all the films, really, because mine actually is episodic, my discs, so each one's part one, part two, and they're hour and a half parts, and that's the opening for the entire series, because I have watched the next movie as well. So that art graphic novel style is for the series. So I don't know, the original film probably had a much different opening than that.
The original film, I don't remember the opening credits at all. I don't really think that they stood out.
So yeah, there's two things about the opening credits I kind of wanted to mention. One is, did it not feel very James Bondish? Did it feel kind of James Bondish to you, the way that it opened with all the sort of the graphics and stuff like that?
Oh, the Fincher one?
Yeah.
With the melting and stuff. Yeah. I think he was trying to do a physical manifestation of mental illness or something. I think there was supposed to be an artsy-fartsy thing. It looked cool. That kind of falls back into his directing of music videos, I think. That was the first thing I thought. I'm like, oh, the music video guy isn't quite dead.
But that said, though, secret credit, opening credits, actually directed by Tim Miller.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And they were supposed to be representation of Lisbeth's nightmares.
Right.
Mm. I guess they had like 50 different images that they were working with, and they had to trim it down to 25 for the opening credits.
Personally, I felt that whole opening credit scene in the Fincher one felt really out of place with the rest of the film.
I agree. Like I said, it felt more James Bond than it did like murder mystery thriller to me.
Yeah, I was kind of reading that the thought behind having like a really kind of higher energy song with those credits was more to get people settled into the movie and to the tone. So by the time the credits are done, maybe you've kind of forgotten what you're carrying into the remake, which is from the book and from the Swedish movie. I'm not sure if that was successful or not, but
yeah, I mean, that's definitely a possibility. It just feels a bit jarring considering the tone, and both films are very good at establishing their look and tones of the film. So, it definitely doesn't match in my mind, and I think it might be more successful for some people than others. Whatever the intent was, it was a cool song.
Oh, absolutely.
I will give them that.
Yeah, but yeah, it does kind of set the tone a little bit for me, because you mentioned earlier that the first act basically feels quite rushed, especially for Lisbeth's character development. I felt that they didn't give Lisbeth the time that she deserved, and they certainly didn't give her the time they gave her in the Swedish version. It wasn't until they met that you started to see more of her.
Yeah, it cuts back and forth between Mikhail and her fairly frequently in the original film. You do get a lot of time with those characters as they develop and grow. Everything just feels like, okay, well, this is all the points are there. They just seem to happen a lot faster in the Fincher film.
They just not as much time on those moments. Mm-hmm.
There was one moment I felt in the Fincher version that I think you could have cut for time and added more time with Lisbeth and Mikhail together, is when Lisbeth's going out to like hook up, and it just seems very, I don't know, it seems exploitative and unnecessary, whereas in the original she just wakes up with a woman. That's all you really need. I don't need to see her hook up. I know she's bisexual.
Well, do you until that point, until she wakes up with a woman? Now we do, right? Like, if your point is to say she's bisexual, then waking up with a woman,
we've done it, there it is.
Yeah, well, I think it's important to note, and Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, but because in the book, if I remember correctly, she was in a relationship with this woman.
She does turn up again in the second film.
Remember there being a relationship between the two of them. It's not like they're girlfriends, but they...
Like, it was like Elizabeth had a small group of friends that she hung out with, and this was one woman that she met at the club. They would occasionally run into each other there, and like they enjoyed each other's company, like not really in a relationship way, but in a like, you know, I just need to be with somebody right now kind of way.
Friends with benefits.
Yeah. Well, I think in the book it was designed to establish that Lisbeth was more comfortable with women than she was with men. And again, it all goes back to what you were talking about with her consistent betrayal by men. And it was kind of to establish that women have always sort of been what they are with her, and she knows what she's getting with them more than anything else.
Yeah, but there is a whole through line of a theme of she can maybe trust women because women haven't always had a secret that's going to hurt her. But with Mikhail, he's like, only when she's able to have full, unrestricted access to his entire life and computer and everything can she finally let her guard down, and maybe he's not going to hurt her like everyone else this time.
And it seems with women, there's not that uneven power dynamic she seems to have experienced most of the time.
Yeah, there's some of that too, yeah. It's not apparent in the movie, and maybe it sort of shows up a little bit better if you move into the second movie, because she is. I know she's present in at least the first two books. I don't remember if I think the third book gets kind of crazy, and I don't think she's in it that one. But again, memory's not so good, so I could be wrong.
And that would be kind of a cool, helpful. I wouldn't mind a bit of time with her being with this person that she's comfortable with. I think that would be an interesting scene.
And it was in the book, because I remember it. I remember that there was a relationship of sorts there.
Nice.
I think that's the thing that's kind of tough in an adaptation, because in the book, it's like it basically happens like it does in the movie, except you have the benefit of being inside of Lisbeth's head as she's like, oh, here's this person who I really like. These are some things that, you know, are relevant for you to know as the reader and in the situation that she's currently in. But other than like adding scenes and stuff in terms of an adaptation, small details like that, I think, are harder to convey.
Now, outside of some minor changes here and there with the film, like Lisbeth is the one that finds her guardian on the ground when she goes to visit him, rather than being informed that he's in the hospital having had a stroke, which is the Swedish one. The ending is actually quite different the way Fincher lays it out from the Swedish one, visually and especially with the final reveal as well, which I'm trying to avoid, but I don't know if I can. Because especially the final review is very different.
You know, this is the point where you can stop the episode, watch the movies, and come back. You know, if you're on board so far, you're going to be on board for the cool ending. So.
Yes. The Swedish one, it hammers it at you all the time of how much Anita and Harriet look alike. Fincher doesn't do that as much. Just like, here's the pictures. Yeah, they kind of do. Yeah. And we don't have those moments of like, it's like, man, they really do look alike, and moving some of the photos back over to a different person because he's got this big wall that he's working with of who connects to what, and he has some evidence, and there's the last photo that Enric has of her. Mm-hmm. He thinks it's Harriet, turns out to be Anita.
Yeah.
And they move it. We don't get that scene at all in the remake.
We don't get the necklace scene in the remake either, do we?
No, I don't believe we do.
Yeah. You know, both of those things are actually like original to the Swedish movie.
Right. Now, in Fincher's, in the original, Anita had died of cancer in London. In Fincher's, she's alive and well in London.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Now, this is the biggest change of them all. At the end, the Swedish one, Harriet, is alive and well in Australia under that guise of Anita, but there are, I guess, that's Lisbeth tracking down, like, here's all these people names. And it's just one of those things that Lisbeth goes, oh, she's probably not dead. Oh, she just left.
comparing these, what I enjoyed more in the Swedish version is when Harriet is telling her story of the horrible stuff that happened to her. She's telling it to Henrik and Mikael. But in the remake, she's just telling it to Mikael. And I'm like, oh, I think Henrik, he should know. And it felt better to me in the Swedish version where he's getting answers, which is exactly why he hired Mikael.
Yeah. I mean, she's being beaten and raped by Martin and his dad, Gottfried, who is dead by the time this investigation begins.
Uh-huh.
Both who are just serial murderers and rapists.
Yeah.
Well, but we can't forget that Harriet killed Gottfried.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's not just dead.
He was
killed in self-defense.
Yeah. He fell in the water drunk and she held him down with an oar.
Yeah.
It's a good cover story. Oh. He's drunk. He fell in and drowned.
I have a question, though, that I don't know if I missed it in both movies. Is in both movies, when Harriet does this, Martin comes down and sees her. Did Martin just agree to cover it up? I don't know if this is actually book.
One thing that I guess we're in full spoiler territory now.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
One thing that kind of happens in the book kind of goes into a little bit more information about what happens immediately afterwards. And it is like actually just graphic, but basically it just boils down to, she finds herself in a situation where Martin says, now you're a murderer. And if you tell anyone that we've been raping you, then I'm going to tell the police that you murdered your dad, and murder is worse than rape. And that's like, you know, she was scared of being, you know, found out as a murderer. And it's just as simple as that.
Which I think is backwards, but that's just me.
Yeah. But you know, when you're in that kind of situation,
true.
You know, it's easy, especially as a kid, mm-hmm. you know, when you're a kid, you make a mistake and the last thing you want is for people to find out. It'd be really easy for someone to, you know, twist that and take advantage. And even though, you know, there's no way that she would ever be convicted of murder in that situation.
That was one thing that I felt both movies, I just needed that quick answer because I couldn't figure out why he let her get away with it, and it didn't. Mm-hmm. It wasn't clear to me.
Now, in the original, correct me if I'm wrong, but Mikael wasn't working under the auspice of I'm doing a family biography. Everybody knew he was investigating Harriet going missing because that was Enric's obsession that's been passed on to Mikael. And I felt it was almost unnecessary to have that extra complication of, oh, well, I'm doing this investigation, but I'm really doing a biography of the family.
That was one thing that, like, so in the book, it is like, you know, you're going to write the family biography is what I'm hiring you to do, but secretly you're investigating Harriet. But, like,
so that was an aspect I really,
yeah, it was an aspect I really liked entirely because they're a family that entirely hates each other, and everybody knows that it's a thing that Henrik is obsessed with, but it's also a thing that, like, people want him to let it go, and he didn't think that anyone would talk to him if they thought that that's what he was investigating.
Oh,
but if he was just asking for family info, that's a different story.
And Henrik already believes these people are capable of murder. Yeah. So just having them know doesn't feel like a good way to go into this.
Like, it was a change that I kind of thought, like, I don't think it adds that much of an extra layer to the story, but I feel like it adds a lot in terms of how the investigation feels and in terms of, like, exactly what Trish said. One of them is suspected of being a murderer, and they, you know, none of them like each other. Like, why would they cooperate with him?
True. Yeah, they are a really miserable family, aren't they?
Yeah. Erica really was the biggest change in, because she's a lot more difficult to deal with in Fincher's than she was in the original Swedish one. She actually comes off very friendly initially until the obsession, the same obsession that Henrik has. It's like, okay, well, this is, you're falling in the same trap, and I'm not going to be that cooperative anymore. But initially she comes off very friendly in the Swedish one, not so much in Fincher's version.
And I wanted to just to go back like Henrik's obsession and the cover story. It was so much so in the Swedish version when he had a heart attack. I didn't think it was a real heart attack. I thought somebody did that to him because he wasn't putting a cover story on it.
You know what? In the Swedish one, they do change the perception of how things, like, it's the same investigation for the most part, but the emphasis is on certain things to make you be misdirected in certain ways in both movies. They use the same information to, like, in the Swedish one, they really try to make you think that it's Harold. They really try to make you think it's Harold in the Swedish one versus the misdirect is something else in the Fincher one.
One thing that we haven't talked about is the way they handled the fact that somebody was coming into the cottage where Mikhail was staying. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't remember there being a cat in the Swedish version. I could be wrong.
There wasn't.
No.
There wasn't. Okay.
That adds to Lisbeth. Lisbeth is the one who notices the disturbance because of her photographic memory. Well, that was over here. This picture was over there. That actually enhances her character. And that's when we get more of a realization of her photographic memory skills. It's Mikhail who discovers the cat inside. Lisbeth wasn't even around during that scene. Yeah. Like, he's bringing in the food from outside, and it's like, oh, where's the cat? And cat's already inside the house, which means it snuck in when somebody else came in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, of course, the cat comes to that horrible end.
Yes, when he finds outside.
And then Lisbeth sets up those cameras, and I blinked and I missed it, but those cameras don't really seem to come into play at all.
Looking at the footage, back from her research, she's looking at the cameras and seeing that Martin was there, and she's already made a connection through research that, like, okay, this is probably Martin. And
she can't get a hold of Mikhail.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, I remember. Yeah, I couldn't remember if she looked at them then or not for some reason. But yeah, you saw a motivation for her to set up the cameras because of what happened with the cat. Because she didn't know. And that's why, like, where that change, again, diminishes Elizabeth's character to a certain extent, because she wasn't present and able to address the fact that somebody was coming in and looking at their research.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, I find Fincher's version does kind of take away from her character, and more focus is put on Mikhail making more of those discoveries. Why wouldn't you? That's James Bond over there.
That was your star power right there, right? Daniel Craig is sort of like at the height of his popularity there. One other thing we haven't talked about is the way they represent Lisbeth physically, because even though there are a lot of scenes that are the same, right? There are the same essential scenes, the Fincher version visually shows Elizabeth nude a lot, whereas in the Swedish version, she's in shadow. You see her bare behind a couple times, but it's not, there's not a focus on her body in this, and it's not as I don't know what the word I'm looking for. I don't want to say exploitative.
No, I'm going to disagree with Sam, because I'm guessing he saw the shorter version, but it is there. You actually do get to see her nude quite a bit in the original Swedish one, but maybe not in the original cut. So yeah, they probably did cut out a lot of that in the original cut.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not a disagreement. You're just a correction.
Yeah, it is a correction because, I mean, your version, but that's probably true.
Yeah. Because you never see her fully nude in the the original theatrical release, I guess is the best way to put it.
They are a little more careful about, because, I mean, when she's naked, half of those scenes are very violent, except for when she's having sex with Mikhail. But there is, they do keep her in a lot more shadow, but you do get to see all the goods there, too.
There's something I also noticed, kind of a difference between how it's sort of presented. Lisbeth's nudity in the Swedish one, it's very different to what Fincher does and Rooney Mara does. Like in Fincher's, I think she presents as more feminine, whereas in the Swedish version, I think she's androgynous, she's bisexual, like she's not, the presentation of her body is different.
Yeah, definitely.
If you get what I'm saying?
I don't know. I think maybe, because what I was reading about the film, I think Rooney Mara was trying very much to match what she read about that character, down to pierced nipples and the same piercings in the nose. For the most part, Noomi Rapace did the same thing, but I don't think went quite as far. But she did take the kickboxing classes and whatnot as well. So,
yeah.
But I think both actresses went that extra mile for that character.
But I think it's like how it's shot is it's more feminized in the Fincher version is what I'm. I don't know.
They seem fairly similar to me. I think the at least with the sex scene, as I mentioned before in the original film, it feels just like meh. I need this right now. I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to go lay down. I kind of like how like just Europeans handle sex, and it's just like, well, sex is sex. It's not a big deal. I mean, and they didn't really shy away from the violence, but I think they were a lot more tasteful when they shot it with the violence than the, I mean, but I think the sex scene with Mikhail was actually more gratuitous. It's just what we paint in our head. As far as the violence scene, it's far more affecting and disturbing, but we're probably seeing a lot less in those scenes.
Yeah, and that actually, you brought up something else that I wanted to mention is there's one scene they did away with that I quite liked in the Swedish version, is after they've had sex for the first time. In the Fincher version, it's immediately after Mikhail gets shot or shot at.
Yeah.
In the original version, she's already slept with him once, and it's after he gets shot that he wants to crawl into bed with her, and she's like, "What are you doing?"
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was like, I just want to be close to you. And she's like, okay, well, don't keep me awake. And I thought that was a really great sort of indication of her character and the way she's sort of starting to respond to him. It's like, okay, well, I like you, so I'll let you stay. But at the same time, she's keeping that.
She's got her guard up. I mean, especially considering recent history with her before that stuff that Mikhail doesn't even know about. Fincher does try. Like that first meeting in his version where he goes straight to her apartment, like you said before, Sam, in the original, she initiates contact through the email. Now it's Mikhail who does it, and we could see her on her guard, like when she tosses out her girlfriend and grabs her taser. It's like, yeah, you're not going to touch me. So we're seeing that skittishness right away and that distrust that she would naturally have.
And it's weird, one too, thing when that, she's saying, like, don't keep me awake. And he's like, I just want to be close to you. To her, I love it. There's that moment where I'm like, it just seems like such a bizarre idea to her. She's like, you want to be close to me? What is this? Like,
yeah, and that's kind of what I was getting at, too.
Yeah, because she doesn't have those kind of relationships. Her closest friend is a hacker.
Yeah.
So I like that Lisbeth initiates contact, at least in the way that it's handled in the Swedish movie, in the kind of like playful manner. Like he doesn't know who this is, and she just gives him this information and everything.
Uh-huh.
Like I like it. The only thing that I think, so that's a change that the Swedish movie made, because it is kind of handled more like it happens in the Fincher adaptation. I'd say that the Fincher adaptation is like 85% the same material. It's a pretty close adaptation for the most part.
Yeah, they do feel fairly close, and when they do diverge, yeah, it's fairly obvious when it happens, but it still stays true to the story. They'll just move things here. It's like, okay, well, they spent more time doing this here. I can do the same thing with this one scene instead. So like I said with Fincher, he has that one scene with her taser when she meets Mikhail, so that says a lot more than something that the Swedish one does a lot more subtly.
Yeah.
Well, and another like whole dynamic that changes too is Elizabeth initiates contact in the Swedish one, but then is surprised when he shows up. And I think that it's like maybe a little bit like a little bit more strange than, on the other hand, she was hired by a research company to research him. And normally the people she researches never sees the information that she is able to find. But because he sees the report that she wrote, he knows that she hacked his computer. And that's why he tracks her down.
Well, keep in mind, Frode is the one who tells Mikhail about her in both movies.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I think that I like that she initiates contact in the Swedish one, but I do also think it's strange that she reached out to him, but then also still reacted adversely when he tracked her down.
Well, she's seeing that he's investigating something when she finally can get back into his computer and she's starting to piece it together. With her own immense knowledge, she's a very, very smart person, and I think that comes across even more so in the Swedish one. And she's compelled to help him in that regard. And I, again, like, there's things that are taking out of the Fincher one that I do think diminish the character somewhat.
Yeah. And to me, I kind of get why she would be surprised he'd show up. Because, I mean, she showed up this guy for not knowing as much as she did. I don't think some men do not respond well to that. So she would be confused that any man would.
Yeah, she was, she was surprised, but more annoyed that he'd showed up, I think.
Yeah.
In the Swedish version, it's like, no, this is supposed to be a sort of a remote relationship where I'm feeding you things, and all of a sudden here you are, and you know more than you than I wanted you to. So yeah, there's more annoyance. Whereas,
like, she wants to be alone. She doesn't. Yeah. She doesn't want human contact. Yeah.
And that's really apparent in the second one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's a big difference. And because she is really interested in him, and that's established better in the Swedish version. But I don't think she even knows where her interest is. She just can't help herself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, we need to start wrapping this up here, but just wanted to throw a few more facts at you. The budget of the original film was $13 million, and its domestic box office for Sweden was nearly $11 million, which is pretty good, but, you know, that's not enough of a return. Now, its worldwide gross went on to make $104 and change, almost $104.5 million. That's the hell of a good box office for a foreign film with a $13 million budget. IMDb gave it a 7.8 out of 10, and Rotten Tomatoes was, they were really close, 85% for critic score, and the audience gave it a couple more at 87%. Now, the remake, that's a hell of a rating. Now, the remake was also 7.8 out of 10, so on IMDb, and Rotten Tomatoes was an even keel at 86%. So as far as ratings go, everybody kind of puts them on even keel. The budget of the remake, the Fincher version, was $90 million with an opening U.S. box office of about $12.7 million. Would go on to gross $102 million in the U.S. and a worldwide gross of $232.6 million. Now, that's a pretty soft box office for such an expensive film. But also, you've got Daniel Craig, who's not cheap.
No.
And
Christopher Plummer, who also isn't cheap.
Yeah, Stellan Skarsgård, not cheap. Rooney Mara was probably fairly cheap at the time.
I imagine a lot of these actors, but it's my suspicion that some of them do forego some of their paycheck to work with David Fincher, the people who do work with him multiple times.
And then David Fincher also is going to demand a pretty big paycheck by that point in his career, so.
Well, and Daniel Craig actually had to decline the role because of Skyfall.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right. And because of delays, he was able to wind up doing it. Skyfall was delayed quite a bit, so he was able to actually do the film.
Which indicates that he really wanted to.
Yeah. And I think he really liked doing the role because both him and Rooney Mara were very upset that they weren't even asked to be in that new one with the girl in the spider's
web. Yeah. You know, they were both really good together as the characters, and they had good chemistry.
Given at least Daniel Craig's box office, they needed to make a new one a lot cheaper, and they did spend a lot less on Spider's Web, and it also failed at the box office. So I think we're probably done seeing Dragon Tattoo Millennium movies in domestic U.S. box office, I think, from now on. I think no more U.S. adaptions will probably happen from here on in, at least on that scale. I could see maybe them just starting again. It would probably do really good on an HBO or Netflix level. We saw how good it was on a $13 million budget.
Yeah, I think they could do it well without spending a fortune, as we've seen.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons that The Girl in the Spider's Web did fail was, one, I think not asking back Daniel Craig and Rooney Mara was a mistake. Two is especially you have that gap between the first movie, time-wise and story-wise, because that movie that came out assumes that you know what happened between the first and the fourth books to a certain extent. And I think that might be why a lot of people didn't go, is like, well, I haven't seen what happens in between. Why would I go see this?
Yeah, we've had a 9-year gap, 8-year gap between those two movies as well. So keeping the property out of theaters for that long as well, people stop giving a shit.
And, you know, as we just talked about, people did generally like the American remake. And I do think that there was a lot of people who were disappointed that that's, you know, a sequel isn't what we got in the true sense with Daniel Craig and Rooney Mara.
Yeah, but at the same time, a lot of people, the people who went, liked it, but not enough of those people went.
Yeah.
So, and it probably is more viable as a television series, and given how dense those stories are, that could still happen. That's I think is a possibility. I could see maybe Amazon or Netflix taking a stab at it, but they may have to give it some distance again before they try again.
Yeah, and I mean, they now have 6 books to work with too, so they've got lots of material where they can make like 6 or 7 episode seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And the concept of Millennium as like a magazine and just investigating stuff opens you up to a whole lot of other possibilities.
Well, sure, if you don't want to adapt the books and do the continuing adventures of those too. But yeah, as far as I know, the fans of the books aren't so much fans of the new ones. Like the Stieg Larsson fans aren't so much a fans of the non-Stieg Larsson Lisbeth books.
I can see that because, like you said, the book, some more kind of James Bond-ish, I keep going back to that, but more sort of James Bond, Bourne Identity kind of stories rather than...
More canned to the market.
Yeah, instead of that like investigative story that we get in the first three books.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. There's so much of Stieg Larsson and his personality and his interests of his life that are in those books and his passions that are gone away now. So it's not his voice anymore either. And I mean, maybe if they were able to cooperate and use his notes and stuff to develop it, then that might be a different story. But I have a feeling it's just now it's just a machine, right? It's a corporate machine.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Which is too bad. But I don't know. At the same time, I'd like to see more Lisbeth. Which version did you guys prefer in the long run? I mean, I preferred the Swedish version and Noomi Rapace's version. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm with you on that too. Even though I didn't see the extended version, I still thought that she captured the darkness that lives in Lisbeth a little bit better than Rooney Mara.
Yeah, and I think Rooney was great at it as well.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I said just a little bit. Because, yeah, she was quite good.
Jeff?
I think that it's kind of, well, after talking today, I do kind of want to go back and, after I've read the books, watch through the extended TV versions of the movies, because there were a few things that you were talking about that some of my kind of problems with the Swedish one were kind of things that I really, really missed from the story that I thought it was to its detriment not being there, that you did talk about being in there in the extended ones. But I did feel overall with the theatrical, it was good, but I liked the David Fincher one more just because it's a combination of, I like his style. I thought the script had really great dialogue, but also it captured more of what I liked about the book, which was kind of the unfolding mystery. Whereas in the Swedish one, they kind of skipped past a lot of it and went straight to the serial killer bits. And I liked the way it unfolded in the Fincher one more. But that said, I want to check out the extended ones. Sounds like I'm in for a treat.
You are. And this is, I think, either version, whichever our audience prefers, both are great films. And I might be swayed because of the first one I watched, right? So I took to the characters and I took to the first ones I saw. And it might be just as simple as that in the long run.
I would say the one thing I do enjoy most about the Fincher version is that Christopher Plummer and Daniel Craig get a scene together, which they don't get to do in Knives Out.
Oh, yes, they are both in that movie, yeah.
But they never have a scene in Knives Out, because Christopher Plummer's dead already.
The family mystery did make me think of Knives Out when I was reading the book and everything as well.
Originally, it was supposed to be Max von Sydow, not the first time Christopher Plummer replaced Sydow in a role.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't know. R.I.P. We're a little factoid, but yeah, R.I.P. It seemed like in their final days, in at least Sydow's days, him and Plummer were often up for the same parts.
Yeah, Christopher Plummer also replaced Kevin Spacey in that movie that came out just recently.
Oh, yeah, it was just a few years ago, and I don't remember the name of that movie, but given the age difference between Kevin Spacey and Christopher Plummer, I'm like, that might have been quite something.
Like, which producers just have Christopher Plummer on speed dial? Like, hey, Christopher, I'm in a bind. Don't have the actor I want. You do it?
If you're under a pinch and you want a good performance, you know you're going to get it from Christopher Plummer.
Absolutely.
That movie he replaced of Spacey's basically had to reshoot every Spacey scene. So, in a very short period of time to make the box office. I think they did wind up pushing that movie back, but only by a few months.
Oh,
I think he even got a best supporting actor nomination.
I do believe he did. Out of that. Yeah.
Christopher Plummer.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
Love it.
What a legend.
One more thing, and I wanted to mention this. The actor who played Plague in the girl in the 2009 Swedish version also supposedly, I'm just looking here. No, it's not him. Sorry, there's one actor who was in both movies. And I thought it was
he played the guy who was the mole in Millennium. He was young Mahler in the remake. They seem
yes,
to be the
that's
guy.
It.
Oh yeah, that and okay, that's that. We don't really have the mole story at all play out in the Fincher one.
And the Millennium, when Henrik offers to purchase or like put money into Millennium in the Swedish version, Martin's not aware of that right away. Mm-hmm. And in the Fincher one, Martin's sitting at the table at the time. Is that what it's like in the book? I don't know.
Yeah, see, you know, the thing is none of that, like, they pretty much almost entirely gloss over the Millennium stuff in the theatrical version of the movie. So yeah, like the whole aspect of Henrik offering to become a partner in Millennium, it is in the book, and it's a pretty big aspect of the book. Yeah, it's not in the Swedish theatrical one. It is in the book.
Right.
Oh, it's in the extended Swedish theatrical.
Well, that's it for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I highly recommend you go see both of them, buy the box set of the Swedish one, because all of them are great films. All of them rate really high. I've finished the second one, and I'm looking forward to watching the third one later this week. So go check them out, and go check out our entire library as well. Find us on our social media. We are at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com. If you want to email us your suggestions, your corrections, and your comments, please do so. We do look at fan challenges. We just had done one last week, so if you have something you think is worthy of our genius, yes, I said genius, or insanity, take your pick, then pitch it to us. Let us know where we can find it, and we'll decide whether it's a good idea or not. If it's a good idea, we'll probably make the episode. If it's a bad idea, we won't.
Actually, we still might, Jay. There have been some times where
yeah, it's
we
not
still
like
might.
We haven't.
We love a challenge. That's hence the word challenge.
That's right. That's why it's called a fan challenge. Now, if you're looking for that entire library and you've just picking up on one of the recent episodes, might have been your first as well. The entire back catalog is available in a ton of different places. Most of our podcast platforms have it. Spotify is missing the first 50, and so is YouTube. But make sure you go check out other episodes and share it out with your friends and family. Help them get their
earballs
on the show. Yeah, man. And if you just want to go searching for the library, you can do it on our Libsyn page as well as our new Wix site. Sam, what is that address?
It is invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
And there's a lot of links to the major podcast cast providers on that site. So go check it out. Now, I got another website for you guys. As a lot of our audience knows, I run a local comic shop here in Calgary called Words and Pictures. And if you're a big comic fan, we are just launched online. Now we have an online store, and you can catch that at wandp.ca. Again, that is wandp.ca, wandp.ca. So go check out new stuff being added all the time. I'm hard at work and getting a lot more product in there as well. By the time you hear this, it'll be 2 more weeks have passed since I made this announcement. So I'll have a lot of product on there by the time you hear it. So go check it out. We'll ship to anywhere in the United States and Canada. Unfortunately for our international audience, sorry. we're not set up for international distribution as of yet, but. Yeah, hop on there, and we specialize in like Silver Age and Golden Age comic books as well. So lots of cool stuff. I also want to mention we're going to be about a couple weeks into Terminus Isolation now. We have friends at Dickens here in Calgary who normally run and I think this is the best episode to announce this. They usually do like an industrial EDM type of weekend here, and it's one of the biggest in North America. Now, like a lot of functions, they were canceled because of COVID-19 this year. So instead, they're putting bands on every Saturday in May on their Twitch stream. So go follow them at Dickens YYC, and you can catch Terminus every Saturday in May. And I just caught the first one, and it was pretty, or parts of it anyway, and it was really cool. So go check them out, and they'll take donations towards the bands and the venue as well to help keep all these artists flowing into the next year. So go check them out. It's worth it.
I think they had 8 bands last night, wasn't it?
Something like that. I caught them early, and then 2.5 hours, 3 hours later, watching Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And by the time I went to check back in, they were done.
Yeah, I had the same problem. I went and checked Helix because you mentioned that they were really good, and I caught a couple of songs. I'm like, it's going to be midnight by the time I finish watching this movie if I don't start now. Mm-hmm. So I had to.
I caught the Helix set and some of the DJ sets, but that was it. And then it was all over by the time I went back. But they're also doing Hang the DJ sets as well every Friday on Twitch. So again, go support them. Make a donation if you can, but it's free on Twitch. You don't even need an account to see it. So go check them out. That's Dickens YYC on Twitch. And hey, if you're in video games, I might as well plug all my friends. Video games, videogametraders.ca. It's videogametrader.ca. And you can order online all your favorite video games and new releases through there, as well as lots of old peripherals and old video games as well. So they specialize in old video games. So if you're looking for that rare Nintendo cartridge or a Sega something, or even last generation PlayStation, they're the ones to check out. So videogametrader.ca, they even carry a lot of Blu-rays and DVDs.
That's what I was about to ask, because they do have an interesting selection if you're looking for something a little bit weird.
That's right.
That's because Jeff runs it, and Jeff loves weird.
Oh, yeah. And it's awesome.
Yeah, Jeff Alpha. All right, shout out to all of those people. I think I'm done with my plugs, so we're going to get out of here next week. We're going to remake something. Until then, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
I always come back as Jeff Omega.
And
but which clone?
Yeah, which clone?
I've lost track.
Get in the airlock. And we are out of here.
What do I do with the girls? That's a good question.
Well, before I do, what are you doing?
Sit down, relax, have a drink. I like that part a lot. Having a chat with both of you, know that one of you is going to die. And afterwards, I just get rid of them, far out of sea. Like my father. Left them scattered all over the place like trophies. That's not very smart if you ask me. He was a loud and garish man. Frankly, he got what he deserved. You can't be a sloppy technician like that. You can't drink to excess like he did. This takes discipline. It's a science of a thousand details. The planning, the execution, it's the cleanup. I guess I don't have to tell you, but you're going to create quite a mess. Let me ask you something. Why don't people trust their instincts? They sense something is wrong. Someone is walking too close behind them. You knew something was wrong. You came back into the house. Did I force you? Did I drag you in? No. All I had to do was offer you a drink. It's hard to believe that fear of offending him is stronger than the fear of pain, but you know what? It is. And they always come willingly. And then they sit there. They know it's all over, just like you do. But somehow, they still think they have a chance. Maybe if I say the right thing. Maybe if I'm polite. If I cry, if I beg. And when I see the hope draining from their face like it is from yours right now, I can feel myself getting hard. But you know, we're not that different, you and I. Both have urges. Satisfying mine requires more doubts.